The next topic we have is SharePoint Online, developing for SharePoint Online and Office 365. We have Chris Mayo here. Chris and I go a long way. I was a product manager at Unified Communications, specifically for Office Communication Server. And Chris has a lot of expertise. He was the technical evangelist there, and he built some awesome UC content. So if you have any questions about that, catch him later. He just joined the SharePoint evangelism team. He'll be talking to you about SharePoint Online. Chris, the floor is all yours.
Thanks. Good afternoon, everybody. Okay, so Mom told you not to chew with your mouth full, so everybody's still enjoying their sandwiches. My name is Chris Mayo. I'm the technical evangelist responsible for SharePoint Online within developer platform evangelism. And I blog at blogs.msdn.com/cmayo. If you want to contact me, you can contact me through my blog with any questions or follow-up from today's session. And today we're going to be talking about SharePoint Online. And just by a show of hands, how many people hear the word cloud a lot lately? Right? Conferences around work, maybe your manager, your CIO, or your CTO is talking about the cloud. What are we going to do about the cloud? How are we going to move to the cloud? And so on. So a logical question for us as developers, as SharePoint developers, is how do I build SharePoint solutions that run in the cloud? Well, the answer is with SharePoint Online, and that's what we're going to be talking about for the next hour. If you look at our agenda over the next hour, you'll see a lot of questions that I'm going to be answering that you might be asking yourself, or questions that I get a lot when I go to TechEd and SharePoint Connections and so on and talk about SharePoint Online, or how do I build SharePoint solutions that run in the cloud. Yeah, so a question that I get, you know, often is, what is SharePoint Online, right? How is it, you know, similar to, or how is it different from SharePoint 2010, which, you know, me as a SharePoint developer, I'm really, really familiar with developing solutions for SharePoint 2010. So tell me, you know, how much of what I know transfers over, or what do I need to learn that's new, right? So another question that I get quite often is, what is the SharePoint Online platform, right? How is it different from what I'm used to using and doing to develop SharePoint 2010 solutions? You know, if there are differences, how do I work with those differences to do the things that I'm used to doing today as far as building solutions? And a lot of folks, you know, they might not be planning on moving to SharePoint Online, you know, immediately or right now, but they want to be able to build solutions that will either run in SharePoint 2010 or SharePoint Online. So they have an easy migration path, or they have that strategy or a plan for moving to the cloud. And we'll talk about the criteria and the things that you need to do in order to make that happen as well. We'll wrap up with plenty of time for Q&A, follow-up questions and so on, either from you guys that are sitting here or the folks that are joining online. And then I have tons and tons of resources to provide you so you can get more depth into the different topics that we're going to talk about over the next hour. So let's talk about SharePoint Online first. So Office 365 is the next version of Microsoft Business Productivity Online Services, or our cloud solution for communication and collaboration. Now, when Office 365 ships later this year, in the first half of calendar year 2011, it's going to ship Exchange Online, Link Online, SharePoint Online, and Office 2010 Pro Plus as a subscription. Right? And you might be familiar with BPOS today. Right, so we have thousands of users, or tens of thousands of companies, and millions of users that are using BPOS today. That particular service is based on the 2007 version of the servers, Exchange, SharePoint, and Office Communications Server. Office 365, when it's released, is going to be built on SharePoint 2010, Exchange 2010, and Link Server 2010. So a lot of the same developer platform story is going to come along with that upgrade. Okay, so these services provided as a subscription service, so rather than you setting up servers and patching and hardware and networking and security and all that, you just pay per user per month and get this cloud-based service, so you get all the capabilities of these servers. So what is SharePoint Online? Well, SharePoint Online, as I'd mentioned in the last bullet, is SharePoint 2010 hosted in the cloud as a service. So it's hosted in Microsoft data centers. We run, you know, geo-distributed data centers across the world to host SharePoint 2010 as a service for our Office 365 customers. We're responsible for the reliability. In fact, the service comes with a 99.9% uptime SLA built into your subscription. We take care of the security, so we've got certifications like ISO 27001 and SAS 70 certified, so you know that your data is going to be protected and secured and backed up. And while SharePoint Online is based on SharePoint 2010, it's not one-to-one feature parity, either from a products perspective or a platform perspective. And we're going to be talking about that quite a bit today. So some features didn't make sense moving to the cloud. Others we needed to tune out or turn off in order to move the on-premise product to the cloud. And we'll talk about that. In fact, we'll talk about it more from a platform perspective over the next hour, because I know, like, I personally don't like to present slides where it's an eye chart and you go by line, yes, no, yes, no. So from a feature perspective, I've actually got a link to the SharePoint Online service description, which actually says, SharePoint 2010 versus SharePoint Online, what feature differences are they feature by feature? And you can see that in the resources. We'll talk about this quite a bit, where the differences in the platform over the next couple of slides. Okay? So SharePoint Online is SharePoint 2010 running in the cloud as a subscription service. Now, when you adopt SharePoint Online, there are some differences in what you get or how you administer the service versus what you're used to with SharePoint 2010. So with SharePoint 2010 administration, we're all familiar with this. You have a server farm, and you set up the servers and the networking and do the patches and upgrades and so on. And then you provision web applications within that server farm. And then within a web application, you provision site collections for your users. And the site collections, their sites, lists, libraries, and so on and so forth, right? Well, it's decidedly different in SharePoint Online, and it's kind of one of those first bits that gets flipped in your mind when you start thinking about the service and the fact that when you go to SharePoint Online, the servers, the hardware, the software, the networking, the antivirus, all that is taken care of for you by the Office 365 team as part of your subscription. So the web application, what you might think of as a web application, we call a SharePoint Online tenancy. When you sign up for SharePoint Online or Office 365, you get a tenancy where we take care of the server farm and the web application. Your point of administration or first point of administration is a tenancy, which is where you can provision site collections for your users, right? And they can use those just like they use site collections on-premise today. But when you start thinking about solutions and so on, and you start thinking about, well, what kind of solutions can I build for SharePoint Online? Well, it makes sense that you can't create web-scoped or farm-scoped solutions for SharePoint Online because it's a shared cloud infrastructure, right? No individual user actually gets an opportunity to modify those servers or modify the bits or deploy, files to the disk, within that cloud because it's going to be shared by millions and millions of users, right? Tens of thousands of companies. So it's just a little bit flip that when I first started looking at SharePoint Online as a platform, kind of flipped in my head. In fact, why don't I go ahead and just show you Office 365 and SharePoint Online from an administrator's standpoint, just so you can get an idea of that. And curiosity-wise, how many folks are on BPOS today? Raise your hands. Okay. How many folks are in the Office 365 beta today? Okay, so a few people. Okay, so this will be new. It'll be interesting to see. Because again, when I start thinking about a platform, I start thinking about, let me just log into this machine again. So you guys saw that cool video that Paul and Donovan did. I'm actually using those same VMs to do my on-premise development, and then I deploy everything up to SharePoint Online. So I'm actually remote desktoping into those VMs, just like they talked about in the last video, so I can copy files back and forth and stuff like that. And I need to go full screen. So let's do this. Display, full screen, awesome. There we go. Okay. So here I'm remote desktoping into my native boot server. And this is running my VMs. And if you look over here, you can see that I'm running 2010A. We'll talk about this in a few slides, but I'm running the on-premise server so I can do all my development and do F5 debugging and stuff like that. And then I just do my validation testing and my actual deploy to production. I do that up actually in the cloud with SharePoint Online. So I'm going to remote desktop into that 2010A image that they showed in that video. Okay, and now I'm in my development environment. I'm ready to start getting into development and partying around on the bits. Okay, so the first thing that I do when I get Office 365 is I log in as the global administrator, the tenancy administrator, right? And here you can see that I'm on the Microsoft Online portal login screen. I'm the administrator, cmao at office365dpe.onmicrosoft.com. And this is just the domain, the demo domain that I'm going to be using for all the demos that we see today. Of course, you can register your own domain here, so it says at contoso.com and stuff like that. But just for the sake of the demo, I'm just going to keep the default. So I'll log in. Okay, and this is the portal page for Office 365, and I've zoomed this up a little bit to make it easier to see online and for those of you that are in the back of the room. But this is like my landing page for Office 365, where I can go into Outlook Web Access, you know, see my calendar. I can install Link from here. I can see my default SharePoint site, or I can install Office Professional Plus if that's part of my subscription, right? And I have some other links up here, you know, to get into OWA and my team site. But I also have this link admin because I'm a global admin or a tenancy admin. Now, if I click on this, you can see here this is where I administer all of the different services, like Exchange Online, so Outlook clients can connect to it, or I can enable OWA or enable, you know, phone access, SharePoint Online, and Link Online. I can also do all my user management here as far as, you know, what user groups, security groups there are and who falls in those groups. Enable, you know, what license they have, whether it's a full license or a license, you know, just with a restricted access just to SharePoint and stuff like that. So I'm going to go ahead and go into SharePoint Online administration, and you'll see here that this is decidedly different from central administration, right? There's no web application section and so on. I have access to manage my site collections, manage send to connections for enabling users to transfer documents, InfoPath, user profiles, and the term store. Right, and if I click on this first link, you can see all of the site collections that I have access to, right, that I'm administrating. And that's, again, the web application gets replaced by the tenancy. My first entry point into the product is at the site collection level. Right, so you can see all the site collections I have here and who manages them and so on. In fact, for the purpose of my demos today, I'll be using my production site, which is https://0365dpe.sharepoint.com sites SPO MSDN, right? And if I click on that link there, and you can see, you know, storage quota and who's the administrator and so on. If I double click on that, this is SharePoint Online. And if I actually compare that to a site that I have running locally, right, so on the left hand side, this is SharePoint 2010 running on that 2010A VM locally on my machine. Right? And here's the same site running on SharePoint Online, or another site that I've created using the same template and so on. They look really, really similar, right? And of course, that's because the new version of SharePoint Online is built on top of the software infrastructure provided by SharePoint 2010. Okay? And that same point of entry into SharePoint Online, as far as being an administrator, you administer the tenancy and then have access to the site collections. It's the same thing for building solutions. Your first entry point into SharePoint Online from a solution standpoint is at the site collection level. And we'll talk about that by going back into the slides. Okay. So SharePoint Online as a platform, what can I do? What can I build, right? Well, all the stuff that you can do out of the box with the browser in SharePoint 2010, provided, you know, that the feature that you're leveraging ships with SharePoint Online, and again, we have that list of features in the references. You can do everything you can do in the browser today with SharePoint 2010. on-premise, you can do up in the cloud with SharePoint Online. Same thing with SharePoint Designer 2010. If you can do it in SharePoint Designer, you can do it just by redirecting SharePoint Designer at your SharePoint Online site or site collection. Okay? Now, where the differences lie is mainly in Visual Studio and building code-based or declarative solutions using Visual Studio. So the development model for SharePoint Online is sandbox solutions. And if you think about that, it makes a lot of sense. Sandbox solutions, as we'll talk about in a couple of slides here, are isolated, protected solutions that you can upload as a site collection administrator. You don't have to have server access or web application access or web farm access, for that matter, in order to upload them and run them in SharePoint 2010. Well, this is an awesome model for SharePoint Online in the fact that you can build these solutions, test them locally, upload them to the farm, and you don't have to, you know, well, you don't have to have access to, you know, the farm or the servers and stuff like that, because in a cloud environment, you don't have access to the servers or to the individual boxes and so on. So sandbox solutions is the development model. What can you do with sandbox solutions? Well, with code, you can create feature receivers, event receivers, web parts, declarative workflow, custom activities. If you're working declaratively through the SharePoint schemas, you can create declarative workflows using SharePoint Designer. You can create site columns, content types, list based on those content types. You can manipulate sites, create site templates. Another development model that's great for SharePoint Online is, of course, the client object model, since it uses client.svc in order to access SharePoint lists and libraries and gain access to SharePoint features. This is another great way to build solutions for SharePoint Online using Silverlight, JavaScript, and .NET. And we're going to go into both of these in depth here over the next couple of slides and next couple of demos. So we'll definitely get deeper in those and provide some ins and outs and best practices around that. But before we do that, I want to talk about what's not supported in SharePoint Online development so you can get an idea of what are the right kinds of solutions for building for SharePoint Online, or what can I do or what can't I do. Again, preparing yourself for moving to the cloud. So obviously, you don't have access to the actual farm or the web applications as part of your tenancy. And we talked about that when we were talking about the administrative demo. So you can't have access to the file system, the machines that your apps run on. You don't have the ability to create web application scoped or farm scoped features, right? Because no one has the ability to actually touch or modify the farm itself or machines that run in the farm. Like, you can't get put stuff in the GAC. You can't access web.config. You can't install code on the server. But through sandbox solutions, you can directly upload code into SharePoint Online and have that run within SharePoint Online. We're going to be doing that throughout the rest of the demos. You also don't have timer jobs, so you don't have access to the timer job feature. So for that workload, you need another way to do that, and we'll talk about some of the workarounds later in this deck. You don't have admin access beyond the site collection, so you can't do stuff like, you know, spsecurity.run with elevated privileges. That's not allowed in the sandbox because obviously no one's going to have no one's going to be granted access above their site collection. And then this is the big one for us for developers, and really kind of the decision point or the inflection point on whether a particular solution is right for SharePoint Online. So when we think about what we're going to be shipping at GA, there's no access to external code or data. So how many folks are doing SharePoint development today with sandbox solutions? Okay, so a few of you. So in sandbox solutions, you don't have access to external web service calls from server-side code. So you can't make a web service call to integrate an external system, right? You can actually work around this in SharePoint Online by creating a client-side solution and making your web service calls that way, either through JavaScript or through Silverlight. But just out of the box, you don't have access to external web services. So that means that any kind of solution that you build, all the data and all the code has to run within SharePoint Online when we ship it GA. And we're looking at enabling this either through best practices and samples or through future features for solutions moving forward. But being able to have external web services access SharePoint Online. So if you've got an external application that wants to reach in and grab data that's running in SharePoint Online, again, right now that's not supported in what we're going to be shipping at GA, but we're going to be ship a sample that shows how to reuse the Office 365 login to use the client access model in order to get at data that's in SharePoint Online. And then BCS. When we ship at GA, we're not going to be shipping BCS as one of those features. Again, it's something that isn't supported in the sandbox, and since that's our primary programming model, you won't have access to BCS as a feature at GA. BCS, again, as a workaround, or when will that feature ship, BCS is something that we want to enable in a future service update. So we'll actually see BCS as a feature before. The plan is to ship that as a feature before we actually ship the next version. So if you use BPOS today or are familiar with BPOS, rather than doing major service updates or major releases, we do service updates interim between major releases. So every 90 days, there's an upgrade. So BCS is something that we're actually going to ship in a future service update rather than the next future version. So it'll come sooner rather than later. Okay. But as a developer, as an architect, when you're thinking about building SharePoint solutions that are going to run in SharePoint Online, you need to keep these things in mind, right? So SharePoint Online right now, looking towards GA, is really geared towards building solutions that run inside SharePoint Online. You won't have access to external systems or external data, or be able to do the reverse, have external systems have access into SharePoint Online. At GA, and again, we're going to be releasing some samples and best practices to work within those constraints to create solutions that do provide those features. But it's just something to keep in mind. Okay, so let's talk about sandbox solutions and drill down into that, the client object model, and as an example of a workaround, talk about building workflows that work within SharePoint Online, building declarative workflows. So with sandbox solutions, Sandbox Solutions was actually created, it was a new feature of SharePoint 2010, and it was created to allow developers to develop solutions that didn't require that you go to the SharePoint admin or the farm admin and say, hey, by the way, could you change web.config, or I've got some bits that I want you to put on the front-end servers and stuff like that, because in general, that was a really hard decision or a hard discussion to have with the admins, because admins want the server farm to be as reliable as humanly possible. They don't want to make changes because that challenges their quest for reliability and security and so on. But developers, on the other hand, want to deploy bits. They want to deploy customizations based on what the business needs. So there was always that friction in versions prior to 2010. So we released Sandbox Solutions with 2010 to make it possible to create and deploy solutions that you could deploy to SharePoint Online without administrative access or administrative approval, and to do so in a way that it couldn't impact the reliability or the security of the server. The great thing about Sandbox Solutions is they not only work great for SharePoint 2010 on-premise, they work great for SharePoint Online. In fact, they work exactly the same, and we'll see that in the demo. So when I do development with Sandbox Solutions, I create a new project, mark it as a sandbox solution through Visual Studio, and then I have a subset of the Microsoft.SharePoint model that I can work in. I'm scoped to SP site, site collection and below, which incidentally maps directly to what you have access to in SharePoint Online. My code runs in partial trust. My code runs in a specific CAS policy, again, for security reasons within the sandbox. Visual Studio 2010 supports sandbox solutions through the new project and new project item wizard. It also supports it through IntelliSense. If you're typing a statement like spsecurity.run with elevated privileges, IntelliSense won't complete that statement for you because it's not allowed in the sandbox. This is a helper to help you write sandbox-compatible code. If you install, as Paul had mentioned in the last session, if you install the Visual Studio 2010 power tools for SharePoint, you actually get compile time support for the sandbox as well. So even if you override or copy-paste some code from a sample into your solution, if it's marked as a sandbox solution, it'll actually throw a compilation error, which is really helpful for your development. You can do F5 debugging against a local instance, and as long as it works in the local instance as a sandbox solution, you know that that WSP can be uploaded to SharePoint Online, right? So a great deployment story, and then the packaging's taken care of as via Visual Studio as well. Now, deployment is decidedly different from a farm solution. For deployment, you just right-click on the solution, say package, and take the WSP and upload it directly into SharePoint Online, right, after you've done all your development and so on. And then you just activate or you give that to the site collection administrator, or if you're not the site collection administrator, and then the site administrators can just sit there and turn on and turn off your features in order to use your app, right? So it's very, very friction-free. It's very, very seamless as far as getting your app deployed up into SharePoint Online, and we'll see that in the demo. Now, your code actually executes in a sandbox environment. It's got its own special sandbox worker process. If your application is having issues, whether it's consuming too many resources and so on, from an administration standpoint, the solutions are self-administering. So there's a quota system in the sandbox. So if your application is terminates abnormally, the worker process is recycled. If your solution consumes too many resources against the quota, it'll actually be disabled, so you don't have to worry about rogue applications destabilizing your site collection or your tenancy, or other tenancy rogue applications that are consuming too much resources, affecting your tenancy and so on. So let's do this. I put in a chart here that kind of shows what's supported in the sandbox versus what is not. If you look, Visual Web Part's not supported, but if you install those power tools, there is a Visual Web Part that is sandboxed, which is a great tool, another great reason to download those power tools. You can create web parts. Sequential and state machine workflows aren't supported, but you can create declarative workflows, and we'll see that in a demo here in a second. We talked about BCS not being supported, application page not being supported, but the rest of these models, these rest of these templates like event receivers, modules, content types, all these guys that use like element.xml, those are all supported as far as the templates. And then user control, again, isn't supported because it requires that you push bits out to the front-end server. Okay? But let's go ahead and just do some sandbox solution code or look at some sandbox solution code. And what I did is during the course of these different demos, I'm going to be building a solution, a demo solution, so it's fairly simplified, around a scenario that Contoso, this fictitious company, they want to provide a way for people to get approval for non-standard business purchases. So they have a procurement system that they use, but if there's something that falls outside of that system, they want to use SharePoint, a SharePoint list and a workflow to manage people making requests for getting something, for purchasing one of these non-standard purchases. So that's what I'm going to be doing in the course of this few next demos. I'm going to be, creating a list, deploying a list. I'm going to be creating a web part that uses Silverlight in the client object model, runs in the sandbox. I'll create a declarative workflow that'll run in the sandbox. And in each case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do all my development and my debugging locally against that 2010A instance so I can get the F5 debugging and so on. And when I'm done, I'm going to take that WSP and I'm going to upload it into SharePoint Online to deploy it in production up in the cloud. Okay? So here's the site that I'll use locally. It's called o365dpe.contoso.com. Sites, FBO, MSDN, site pages, and then I have a site called Purchasing that I'll use for the solution. And then when I deploy it up to the cloud, it'll be office365dpe.sharepoint.com. Okay? Just so you can see the difference. Okay, so here's my first solution. What I needed to do is when I create any of these sandbox solutions, I just do File New Project. And I create an empty SharePoint project. And this is a very important dialog. Sandbox Solutions is the development model or the development model for SharePoint Online. So I always want to create a deploy as a sandbox solution if I want it to be something that will run in SPO. Again, I can create, since the development model, the SDKs, the tools, and all that stuff is the same, if I want to create something that's going to run on SharePoint 2010 or SharePoint Online, again, I just use the sandbox model. So what I do here is I select this option. What is the trust level for this SharePoint solution? I say deploy as a sandbox solution. I've actually already done that to create my project here. I've got lots of demos today, so I coded them up all beforehand just so I could show you different elements of them. We could cover the entire platform, or at least most of the platform, in the course of an hour. But what I did is I created, in this particular solution, I want to deploy a list. So some site columns, a content type, and a list definition, as well as a list instance for my solution. So I'm going to create a list called the non-standard business purchase requests. right? So in order to do that, the first thing I need is a content type. So I say add new item. I select content type and click add. And then I tell it what content type I want to base it on. Right? And I'll base it on item. Okay, so I pick up all of the columns for item. I've actually already done this to create this non-standard business purchase requests content type. And if you look at the elements.xml, and I assume you guys in the back can see that okay. Can you give me a thumbs up if you can see it? Awesome. Okay. So you can see here that my content type called purchasing manager dash non-standard business purchase requests. You can see here that from the template that I used, that it's based off of item. And I went through and I defined a couple of site columns for myself called request description with a display name of description, type note or multi-line text. Create another one called price of type currency. And then I created the content type based off of those two site columns. And you can see here that my list is actually made up of title, request description, you know, so what do you want to buy, what is it, and then the price. And that's going to be my content type I'm going to base all my lists off of. Okay, I'm doing all this declaratively. We'll deploy some code with web parts in the sandbox and then a workflow later. But just to do some stuff declaratively, just to show the different things you can build. The next thing that I did is said add new item. And I wanted to create a list definition based off that content type. So I selected list definition from content type. If I wanted to just do it free form, I could do list definition. You know, you click add here, and then you pick the content type you want to base that off of. Of course, I'm going to pick it off or pick it based on the content type I just created, the non-standard business purchase content type. And then I'm going to select this box that says add a list instance for me of that list definition. Again, I've already done that to save us some clicks so we can see even more code. So if you look at the elements.xml for this, you can see here's the name, non-standard business purchase request list definition. I give it a type, which is a unique ID that needs to be over 10,000 because that's reserved for SharePoint's use. It needs to have a unique number within my feature, so I just pick 1051 or 10,051. I give it a display name. I give it a description, you know, non-standard business purchase request list definition, you know, for the purchasing manager solution, right? And then I can go into the schema and define, you know, what I want the views to look like, you know, because I want the view to show all my different columns. All right, so you can see here, here's my main view. And within view fields, I'm going to show the attachments, the title as a link, and then my request description and price. Okay? And then to define the list, again, I just go into the elements.xml for my list instance. I give it a title, non-standard business purchase requests. I tell it what template to base that off of, and then give it a description. Okay? And then I'm done. So what do I want to do? Well, I want to debug what I'm doing. So I'll hit F5, and this will use the Visual Studio debugging for SharePoint to package this guy up and publish it out to the URL of my application, which, of course, was this 0365dpe.contoso.com sites. SPOMSDN purchasing, all right? And you can see here, this is all running locally. If I scroll down here to site settings, and then go to site columns, and I put this stuff in my own group, so purchasing manager, custom columns. Okay, there's description and price, so that deployed successfully. So let's go back and check on my content type. Okay, and there's the group. So that deployed successfully. So there's my content type with the right columns in it. Okay, so title, description, and price. And then here's my list. Okay, so here you can see there's the link or the attachments, the link title, the description, and the price. So I'll add a new thing. So I would like to have a hovercraft. Okay, so a vehicle that hovers, which is admittedly a non-standard business purchase request, And I haven't priced out a hovercraft in a while because last time I asked, it was actually rejected. But I assume that a vehicle that hovers is going to be like 10 grand. Okay, so there's my list for my solution. This is where people put their requests to get non-standard business purchases, right? And I did all that just by F5 debugging. Now, when I want to actually deploy this, let me just close these windows here. And I accidentally closed Visual Studio. Now, when I want to deploy this, it's just a matter of right-clicking and saying package, and it gives me the package. And then I'm going to go up and actually deploy it into my on-premise site so I can build other solutions off of it. And then I'll show you uploading it into SharePoint Online just to compare and contrast that, right? So to deploy it to my on-premise site, since it's a sandbox solutions, it's incredibly easy. I just go over to Galleries, Solutions, click on the Solutions tab, say Upload Solution, click Browse, and then go find the bits that I just compiled. Okay, so Purchasing Manager is the name of my solution, bin, debug, and there it is, just compiled just 1 minute ago. Okay, so that's my solution. Okay, and I activate it. And then I go over to purchasing my site and I'll turn on the feature. Okay, so I'm doing this all on premise right now, just so I have it to build on top of. So, purchasing manager content types and lists was the name of my solution. Okay, and then that deploys the list. So if I go into the purchasing site, yeah, there's the list that I created, right? Because Visual Studio will actually retract the list and it'll retract the views and stuff like that. So if you want to use the list after you do the F5 debugging, you have to actually deploy it. Okay, so a fair question is, how do I actually deploy the solution to the cloud so I can get my list up in SharePoint Online? It's the exact same thing because both support sandbox solutions through the solution gallery. So I'm going to go to my online site, go Site Actions, Site Settings, Solutions, Upload. I'll browse to the same WSP, click OK. I'll activate the solution. I'll go over to my purchasing site. You can see that the list isn't there. It's not included in the quick launch. So I just need to activate the feature. Go to Manage Site Features, scroll down, activate. Okay, and then there's my list. All right, so I can add a new item. So I need a cloak of invisibility. It's a garment when worn. What makes me invisible? Okay, and again, I don't know what the price, like what the market is for invisible cloakage, but I'll assume that that's going to be pretty pricey because it makes you invisible. But there's my list. So I know it's an incredibly simple solution because it was all declarative, right? But think about that. I created a solution, packaged it up in a WSP. It's now running in the cloud just by uploading it to a specific document library, the solution gallery, and now it's running in SharePoint Online, right? So when people ask you, so how do I create solutions that run in SharePoint Online or SharePoint solutions that run in the cloud, all you have to do is think about sandbox solutions, client object model, declarative workflow. If it fits within those models, you are, as a SharePoint developer, you are a cloud developer now, okay, with SharePoint Online. So it's pretty cool. Let's go back into the slides and talk about the next opportunity for development of those three that I talked about, which is the client object model. So again, the client object model was new with SharePoint 2010, and we as SharePoint Online developers picked that up with the upgrade of Office 365 to the 2010 versions of the servers. It's a new API. It's very similar to the Microsoft.SharePoint API or namespace, and the fact that it's an object-oriented API. It's actually calling the client.svc web service in the background for you, and it's actually doing it in a more efficient way than you would do it if you were writing the code by hand, because you can actually batch up the calls. But it gives you client-side access, either through the browser or if you're creating a console application or a WPF application, gives you access to SharePoint data via just these common types, right? And they're kind of cool because once you learn them for, you know, Silverlight, they're very similar across the different kinds of solutions you can build. So the classes look the same as much as possible. Like Silverlight's, you know, slightly different from JavaScript and so on. So the supported platforms are .NET 3.5, Silverlight 2.0 and above, and of course ECMAScript, so JavaScript and JScript. Now, one of the cool things about the client object model is that from JavaScript and from Silverlight, you can make web service calls. So even though you can't make a web service call from the sandbox, you can make a web service call from Silverlight and via the client object model actually use the payload from that web service call to, you know, insert stuff into a list or update a list or start a workflow or anything along those lines. So again, it's a great way to kind of work within the constraints of SharePoint Online and what we're shipping at GA. In fact, in the November 2010 issue of MSDN Magazine, Steve Fox did a great article on how to integrate SharePoint and Azure web services using this client object model or using Silverlight. So it's a great article to check out. And I have that in the resources. So let's actually do this right quick, do some Silverlight development. I'll go back over into my code. Let me close this guy down. Close this solution. And here what I'm going to do is I'm just going to create or show you a really quick example of creating a Silverlight application that interacts with SharePoint through the client object model and to deploy that as a custom web part. Okay? So I've got this solution. It's called Purchasing Manager WP or web part. Let me just close all these guys down so we don't have a lot of files open. And so what I did is I created a new Silverlight 4 application. You can see here I called it non-standard business purchase requests, Silverlight OM or Silverlight object model. I made two references to microsoft.sharepoint.client.silverlight and microsoft.sharepoint.client.silverlight.runtime. And these are the client object model references that I need to make. And then I created my incredibly flashy Silverlight UI, right? Which, as a developer, not a designer, it's gray boxes. So I've got gray boxes for title, gray boxes for description, and gray boxes for price. And then just to really show some glitz, I created a gray button called add. Like we all know, you know, we all have our skill sets. We all know what we're good at. And I'm the gray box guy. The magic happens behind the button, not in the button. So here's my code. And if you start looking at this, it looks really similar to Microsoft.SharePoint namespace code, where I get access to the context. So instead of SP context, it's client context. And that gives me access to the context that I'm running in within SharePoint. I do that based on a URL that's passed to my application or passed to my Silverlight app. And we'll talk about how in a second. I access the site. I access the list collection. I get access to a particular list by title, which in this case is the non-standard business purchase request list, because that's the one that I want to add items to. And then I create a list item called new list item, populate it with data from my UI, just from those text boxes, right? And then I call new list item.update. And this just updates the record for me. And this is that efficiency that I had talked about in the slides, where I can do this lots and lots of times, each time loading the command or the thing that I want to do, like new list item, into the client context via the load method, right, and just passing that in. It actually doesn't make a round trip to the server until I call client context.execute query, or since this is Silverlight and we want to have the UI thread be responsive, we'll call client context.execute query async and just pass it, you know, a couple of delegates to call, like onQuery succeeded, onQuery failed. And you can see here that I'm just using a lambda expression to show a text box to say that the new item was added successfully. Right? Okay? So once I've got that, that's my Silverlight application. I want to deploy that in a web part. So I created a new project, empty SharePoint project, as a sandbox solution because I'm going to use it in SharePoint Online. I created a new module to deploy the Zap from that project into a folder called Client Bin. And then I needed to create my web part itself. And here you can see I created a web part called Non-Standard Business Purchase Requests Web Part. This web part is just a regular web part, right? And within create child controls, I call base.create child controls to do my inheritance or to cycle through the base inheritance in order to get all my code wired up correctly. I then create an instance of a class called Silverlight Object Tag Control. And this is just a little helper class that I created to generate the object tag for me so I can pass in parameters and set the source and stuff like that. And if you look at this class, you can see here that it itself inherits from web control and has a couple of parameter or properties, one called source and one called init parameters. And in its call to create child controls, you know, we call base. And then I sit there and I build the object tag using a literal control in order to create my Silverlight object tag, you know, using the source property that was passed in. So where do I expect the Silverlight zap file to be found? And then what init parameters do I want to pass in, like the URL that I use to instantiate client context? So if you look at that code that I was just showing you, you can see that I use Silverlight object tag control SLHC. I set source to be SP context. This is running in the context of the server-side page.current. .site.url, and then client bin, and then the name of the zap. Okay. And then I pass in URL equals spcontext.current.web.url. Okay. And that's how I'm initializing my application. Okay. So let's just do this. I'm going to go ahead, and I am such an awesome developer, and we're kind of running late on time, that I'm not going to debug it. I'm just going to assume that everything's going to work, and I'm going to upload this to SharePoint Online. I know. Okay. So I will go to my SharePoint Online site. So don't try this at home. It's foolhardy, except for if you're standing in front of like 100 people or maybe 1,000 people online, then wing it. And I'm going to go ahead and say site settings, solutions, it's a sandbox solution, so I just go to the solution gallery and say upload. And this uploads it to SharePoint Online, and then I can start using it. Okay, so I'll go to my solution directory. So there we go, web part. There's my web part, bin, debug. Webparts.wsp, open, okay, and I'll activate that solution, which copies the zap to the right place and then puts the web part into the web part gallery. I'll go over to purchasing, I'll edit the page, and then I'll insert my incredibly flashy, overly styled web part full of gray boxes. Okay, and it's in the folder or the group that I put it in, non-standard business purchases. Click OK. And it'll take a second to upload it or to instantiate it for the first time. And I'll click Save. Okay. And if I would have F5 debugged this through that checkbox that says debug Silverlight in the SharePoint project, I could have debugged both the server-side code in my web part and the client-side code in my Silverlight app. So it's a great story from development standpoint. So I would also like a hot tub, a perpetually hot tub of water for relaxing. For relaxing. And I assume, let's just go big and go with 15 grand. I mean, if they're going to give it to me, they're either going to give it to me or they're not. And it says new item added. And we go into the list. Okay, and there's my cloak of invisibility, and there's the hot tub that I just had. So I actually was interacting via Silverlight with SharePoint data, lists, and libraries, and so on through the client object model. Okay, and if I needed to get some data from like a web service that was running up in Azure or on-premise through the Azure Service Bus, I could do that from the client-side object model and just insert that data or co-present it or mash it together in a Silverlight grid or something along those lines. So it's a great way to get outside of the sandbox with Silverlight. Okay, works for JavaScript and works for .NET client code as well. Okay, so in the code when we were talking about the sandbox, you notice that both sequential workflows and state workflows or code-based workflows in general isn't supported in the sandbox. So you can't use those solutions in a solution that will run either on-premise and or, I'm sorry, that you want to run in both on-premise and SharePoint Online or in SharePoint Online. But you can create declarative workflows, right? So declarative workflows are workflows that you build with SharePoint Designer. You can optionally design them in Visio, which is a great way to take a Visio diagram to the person that's actually, you know, writing the check, the business owner, and get them to sign off on the what the workflow is actually going to do, because they probably understand Visio a lot better than they understand XAML or SharePoint Designer, right? And they can see it visually and they say, yeah, that's what it should do. So you can design it and prototype it in Visio 2010. You can export that diagram and import it into SharePoint Designer 2010 to actually implement the workflow. And then when you're done, you can actually export that as a template and deploy that with the rest of your solution as a WSP that gets uploaded into the solution gallery as a sandbox solution. The really cool thing about declarative workflows is even, you know, if you're working in a declarative workflow and you can't find an action that actually does what you needed to do, say create a new site, you can actually create a custom SharePoint 2010, a SharePoint Designer 2010 custom action that you can deploy with your solution and then use that in your workflow. So it's a great way to call code from your workflow. You don't have to do everything declaratively. As long as it can be done in a sandbox solution and uploaded into SharePoint Online, it can be done as a custom code call within your SharePoint Designer code. Okay? So let's actually go over into the code or into my development environment and take a look at that. I'm going to close this guy down and close Visual Studio. And I'm going to open up SharePoint Designer. In fact, let's do this first. I created a little simple Visio diagram to represent my workflow. And this is what I want to happen when people go to approve a non-standard business purchase request. So I built this diagram in Visio using the SharePoint 2010 shapes. So I start the workflow and I use a approval process shape, right? So start the non-standard business purchase request approval workflow. This sends it out to the, you know, so I want people that can approve this thing to make a decision, yes or no. I log their decision to a list. Right, I use this conditional shape to say, okay, was it approved or rejected? And if it's yes, I'm going to simulate in the world of demos that it actually goes through the approval and purchase process by sending an email. If it's rejected, I'll send an email, then I'll delete the item. Okay, I know this is really, really simple, but you know, chances are if you, you know, sat down with your person that owns the business side of the workflow and they kind of walked you through what you want the process to do, chances are you could model it with Visio and go back to them and say, hey, is this what you were talking about? And they say, yeah. It's really cool because you can say process, click on the process tab and click export, which exports it to a Visio workflow interchange file, which can be consumed by the workflow development tool for declarative workflows, which is SharePoint Designer. So I can open up my purchasing site. This is running on-premise, so I developed my workflow on-premise. And go over to the Workflows tab. You can see here I can create list workflows, I can create reusable workflows, or I can create site-based workflows. I want to create a reusable workflow because that gives me the option to save it as a template. And when I save it as a template, it creates a WSP for the workflow that I can upload into the solution gallery as a sandbox solution. So if I look at my workflow, I've already actually implemented it. I can either have it an automatic workflow that gets fired off based on an event or a manually started one. This one's going to be manually started. I'll actually collect some information when the workflow starts by creating a parameter called business rationale. Because if someone wants a cloak of invisibility, they have to have a really good reason on why I'm going to fork over 20 grand for that. So I ask them at the start of the workflow, what's the business rationale, right, for their hovercraft or hot tub or whatnot. And then I actually go through and implement the workflow. And if you look at it here, you can see that it follows the same flow as that Visio diagram, because it actually built this flow off of the Visio diagram, and I just use, you know, different conditions and actions to augment that. Or in most cases, I just fill in the blanks. So this is the email that gets sent based on starting that approval process, where I send it to the groups, to the group approvers. I can do things like say, here's the title, please review this non-standard business purchase request and fill in variables from the workflow or from the list. So I can pull things from the current item like the title. Or I can do things like, you know, build out a description of what the request is and use workflow variables and parameters to specify the business rationale in the mail that goes out. Okay? And then I can use conditional actions to check things like, you know, if the item is approved equals yes, then I'm going to send the email. Again, I'm going to use variables from the workflow or from the list item itself to send the information I need to send. So this is me, you know, going through and actually implementing the workflow that I designed in Visio. When I'm ready to publish it, I can go ahead and just click publish. But actually what I want to do, I've actually done all the development, debugging and stuff like that. What I actually want to do is I want to upload this into SharePoint Online and deploy it with the rest of my solution. So I click this button, Save as Template. And you can see here it gives me a message box that says this template has been saved to the Site Assets Library. Awesome. So let me go to my site. And I will go Purchasing, Libraries, Site Assets. Oh, I'm not in the purchasing site. That would help if I was actually there. Okay. And then go Libraries, Site Assets. Okay, and you can see I practiced today, so hopefully everything was going to go great. And here's the 1:57 p.m. So I click on this. I save it to my local machine. Let's just save it with the right name. Okay. And then if I want to use this, I can actually go to my SharePoint Online site. Okay. And again, it's a sandbox solution, so I can upload it by going Site Settings, Solutions, click here, say Upload. Let me go find that guy. Documents. SPO MSDN, workflow. Okay, so there's my WSP. Click OK. I'll activate the solution. Then I need to go into the purchasing site and turn on the feature, right? But here I am. I'm up in the cloud. Got my solution up in there. This is just using the solution gallery. There's no magic here. There's no difference between how you do this on-premise versus online. You can see here, I just use the normal name they give me, workflow template non-standard business purchase approval from web template purchasing. I could crack that open and change the name if I wanted to make it more user-friendly, which is probably a good idea. Now, if I go over to purchasing and click on this list and click on an item here, you can see that the workflows is grayed out because I haven't associated it yet, so I need to do that. So I'll go to Workflows, Workflow Settings. I'll select the content type that I'm supporting, Purchase Manager, Non-Standard Business Purchase Requests. I'll click Add a Workflow, and I'll pick, there's my workflow that I created in SharePoint Designer. So I'll just call it Non-Standard Business Purchase Requests. Approval. I can decide what task list to use, what history list to use, and then allow it to be started manually. Click Save. Okay, and then let's go back into the list and let's see if I can't get that cloak of invisibility pushed past the purchasing folks. Okay, so I click on the workflow. I'm going to give a business rationale. I like to sleep late. And this lets me sneak into meetings. Okay. So that's my business rationale. So this is obviously going to be approved. Who wouldn't give me $20,000 to sneak into meetings late because I am sleepy? And I'll take a second to warm up for the first time just because I just deployed that that WSP up there. So it'll cache it like everything else, and the next time it'll be speedier. Okay, so cloak of invisibility. Let's go workflows. Let's look at the one that's running. And you'll remember that I checked that box to say that I wanted to show a visualization of the workflow. So here it is based on my Visio diagram, which, again, is really cool for your business users so they can see where everything is in the process. Incidentally, I'm in the approvers group, so I can approve my cloak of invisibility, which is convenient from two reasons. One, for the demo, and second, because now I have a cloak of invisibility, and I can sleep as late as I want. Okay, and then you can see that it goes through the process and marks the diagram. These little check boxes show that it's been updated. So this is a good example. Like, you know, and folks, when I talk to folks and they say, you know, I would love to do some SharePoint Online development, but I'm using, you know, state machine and sequential workflows. Well, you can, you know, those aren't supported in the sandbox, but with spending some time getting used to using SharePoint Designer, building some custom actions and using the events, you can create some really sophisticated workflows that are declarative by nature that'll work either in SharePoint on-premise or SharePoint Online, giving you some flexibility of having that solution being available to SharePoint Online users or when your company upgrades in the future to SharePoint Online if they choose so. Okay? So a great development story there. Let's talk about a couple of key points as we wrap up. And then I'll talk about resources. So what is SharePoint Online? SharePoint Online is SharePoint 2010 as a subscription service hosted in the Microsoft data centers running in the cloud. It ships with Office 365. We're in beta today, and we're scheduled to release in the first half of this calendar year. As a developer, I can build solutions that run either on-premise or in the cloud by following the SharePoint Online development tenets, which is use sandbox solutions for your code. Sandbox solutions are easy to develop with the power tool support and the support within Visual Studio. They're easy to deploy because I can upload them directly into the cloud and just activate the features. And they're self-monitoring, so I don't have to worry about rogue applications bringing down my site collection and me getting a call about what happened, right? The client object model gives you the opportunity to create rich internet applications, you know, via JavaScript and Silverlight that interact with data within SharePoint, right? And they're really, really cool because they're very similar to the Microsoft.SharePoint namespace. They're also very cool in the fact that the classes work generally the same across the different supported client types, whether it's JavaScript, Silverlight, or .NET. There might be subtle naming differences just because they are different languages, but for the most part, if you learn one of them, you learned all of them. And then if you want to automate a business process, you can use declarative workflows. You can design them in Visio, you can implement them in SharePoint Designer, and you can deploy them as a sandbox solution with the Save As Template feature in SharePoint Designer 2010. So if you want to build an SPO-ready solution, move to the sandbox, leverage the client object model, and build these declarative workflows. If you want to access external data, do that through BCS, even though you know that that's going to be a sticking point for your movement. But again, that's something that we want to enable in the future. So at least the hard work or the heavy lifting would be done already in moving to the sandbox, moving your solution to the sandbox. If you want to access SharePoint Online or access SharePoint code in your solution from an external service, like something running in Azure or running on-premise and so on, do so via the client object model. Because again, through a sample that we're going to be releasing later in the ship cycle, we'll be showing you how to use to reuse the Office 365 ID in order to get at that data by authenticating your code to Office 365. Again, that's the model that we'll be moving towards in the future, so you know that your solution will move when we ship that sample or ship that feature. Now, resources. What I did in the resources is I put a link to the Office 365 site. It includes a fact sheet that talks about the different versions, small business, enterprise, education, what they cost, how they're similar to each other, or how they're different across the different versions. I included the fact sheet, which has a lot of those details. The service descriptions goes service by service and says, here's the difference between SharePoint 2010 and SharePoint Online, or Exchange and Exchange Online, or Link and Link Online. And then the SharePoint Online Developer Resource Center is kind of the one-stop shopping for getting all the different resources for building SharePoint Online solutions. And you've probably seen this in the help already, where we're going through all the help and marking things on whether they're compatible with SharePoint Online. Because, you know, for the most part, as long as you keep in mind the sandbox solutions, client object model, and the declarative workflow thing, a lot of the development, it's exactly the same. You're using the same tools, same SDKs, the same classes, right? So we've actually started doing that in the help already. A great article, SharePoint Online, an overview for developers. I've included a link in that. And then, of course, the SharePoint 2010 training kit that Paul had put together has some great information about sandbox solutions, the client object model, and then declarative workflows is actually covered up in the SharePoint Designer 2010 site. So that's SharePoint Online. I'm, of course, going to take some questions, but before I do, I just wanted to say thanks very much for coming to the Firestarter. It's great to see you guys here, either in person or online. And thanks for coming to hear about SharePoint Online. Cool, thanks. Yeah, there was a question.
Is it possible to deploy assemblies with your solution as long as they follow the security model?
Yeah, so the question was, is it possible to deploy assemblies with your solution as long as they follow the security model and CAS policy model that sandbox solutions do? Is that right? No. Because that would entail you deploying bits to the farm servers, and they're not. It's a cloud service where no individual server is unique, right? They're all the same, homogenous. That's how we get the economies of scale that we do. So the only way that you can deploy code up into SharePoint Online is via sandbox solutions and uploading a WSP. Okay, cool. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. So the statement was, or the question was, hey, if I've got some assemblies that I'm using for, you know, ASP.NET or SharePoint, and they involve me, you know, pushing some bits out to the front end server or modifying web.config or something like that, can I still do that? Yeah, like, are we going to offer, like, samples and things like that for the sandbox, like, to include, you know, so all the samples, like, in my training kit, we're putting together a training kit for SharePoint Online that we're going to be releasing, just like we did the UC14 training kit or the SharePoint training kit, where all of the samples and all the exercises and all that stuff is going to run in the sandbox, right? And any samples that you see that are going to be, that say, SharePoint Online compatible, they'll fit that model. Yeah. If anything, I think we're going to see a lot of people building solutions that run in the sandbox on-premise anyways, because it's a great model for deployment. You don't have to, you know, get an administrator to sign off on modifying web.config or touching all his front-end servers and stuff like that. You just upload it to the solution gallery. So I think we're going to see it, you know, a lot on-premise, and that's going to automatically migrate or apply to online. So again, just keep in mind, if it's sandbox, it'll work on-premise or online. Okay? Yeah, question.
Is Visio part of the Office 365?
So the question was, is Visio part of Office 365? So One of the options in Office 365 is you can get a version called Enterprise that includes Office Professional Plus as part of the subscription. And you download it from the Office 365 site, and they take care of all of the patching and updates and all that stuff, as well as the work to connect it to your Office 365 Exchange and SharePoint and all that. I don't think that includes Visio, but I'm not sure. If you look at that fact sheet, it'll tell you what's exactly included in it. It's just Office 2010 Professional and Plus. There's no difference other than the fact of how you get it rather than buying a box or getting a CD. You just install it directly from the service.
Okay. We have a few questions from our online audience as well.
Okay.
Two questions being asked over and over by a lot of people. When is it available? How much will it cost? Do we have answers?
Yeah, so two great questions. When is it going to be available? So we're in a limited beta right now. So we have, I run an early adopter program. We've got actually a lot of companies that are building solutions today for SharePoint Online and Link Online and stuff like that. So if you go to office365.com, or it was in the link, it's office365.microsoft.com. There's a link that you can click on to get on the wait list for the beta. We're currently filled right now, but we're looking to add more beta customers. And then we're scheduled to release in the first half of this calendar year. So we're right now we're getting a lot of feedback. We're helping a lot of our ISVs and partners build solutions for Office 365. And again, first half of this year. As far as the cost is concerned, there's different costs based on what version you get. So the first version is SharePoint for, or I'm sorry, Office 365 for small business, which includes SharePoint Online, Exchange Online, and Link Online. It's for 1 to 25 users. The support model is just forum support, though that's managed by the Office 365 team. And that is, the last time I checked, you can go to the fact sheet to make sure, but it was $6 per user per month, okay, up to 25 users. Now, the enterprise version is an unlimited number, right, of per user or of users, and that is that includes not only the forum support but phone support and email support, and that's $10 per user per month or $24 per user per month if you're getting Office as part of that subscription as well. And then the last version is Office 365 for Education, and we just released some details about that. I'm going to post those on my blog over the course of the next couple of days. And that is, I can't remember what the price is, but there's a cost for per user per month for the staff, but the students are included. And I'll post that up on my website. And that, again, is included in those fact sheets. So it's pretty different in the fact that, you know, you pay a per user per month. You know, it's easy to add users. You just go up to the browser and click a couple boxes and add them. If someone leaves the company or whatever, you just turn them off by unchecking the box. And you just pay per user per month. You don't have to worry about the hardware, the network, the security, the storage, any of that. All that's taken care of as your per user per month as part of the service. Okay, so check out the service descriptions in the fact sheet and read through those. They're really, really quick to read, and it gives you an idea of what you're getting as part of your subscription. Okay? So I saw a hand in the back row. Yeah.
Yeah, just to add on to the Visio question, Visio services supported in the Office 365?
I honestly do not know. So if you wouldn't mind contacting me via my blog, I'll just check the fact sheet and I'll post a blog post on it. Yeah, form service. So the first question was, is Visio services supported? My answer to that is, I don't know. And then the second question was Excel services, and the other one was InfoPath services.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you looked on that admin screen, you could see all the configuration links for InfoPath services. So that's included. And I know Excel services is included because in one of the labs for our training kit that we're looking to release at GA, we actually do some really cool stuff where you upload an Excel spreadsheet, and we use that data and those charts throughout the rest of the site. Yeah.
Awesome. I think, thank you so much, Chris. That was a fantastic session.
All right. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the Firestarter.